interview with Mrs. Herman Kupfer-Nagel, 201 Felisa Street, San Antonio, Texas, on October 21, 1972. She is helping us recall things of her childhood and youth in the German community of Austin County in the early 1900s. To start with, can you tell us anything about the schools and the teachers and what they were like?
Well, the schools were a one-room school, and the benches came from the aisle to the wall, all in one. There were benches, not separate desks.
Mm-hmm.
And from 5 to 6 pupils were seated in these desks, and underneath we kept our slates. We had no tablets. We used slate and pencil. And, of course, when the slates needed cleaning, some of the children had a sponge to clean this. Others simply spit on the slate and took their sleeves and wiped them clean. And, of course, our inkwells were on top. And we had our penmanship. In those days, we had the teachers insisted on good penmanship. And we had spelling bees. We had our history book on history and arithmetic, geography, and required subjects in the public schools.
How did a teacher manage to teach several grades in one room?
The older ones, they sat in front, and he would write questions on a sheet of paper. And we had to take that sheet of paper and study. We studied, looked up these, and filled in the question. Then when we had, we were ready to recite, he would call out now what he had written, you know, and we would answer what we found in the book, you know. This is how we studied under him.
So what did the little people that were just learning to read do?
Well, they, there was a, Mrs. Backus taught the younger children, up to the third grade, I think. And then Professor Backus took the older ones. But this is how he taught. It was more of a written, always a written test, wasn't it?
I imagine. Did you ever hear of any teachers disciplining children?
Yes, some were very severe. In fact, in one of the cities, they still had the whipping wheel. These boys were placed under this wheel, and it was turned. It had straps like belts, and as this wheel turned, those straps whipped that boy.
For what reasons?
Usually misdemeanors. Sometimes we're not turning in their assignments, not knowing the lessons.
Ooh, I think I would have gotten my lesson done. Can you think of anything that has to do with transportation?
Well, in those days, of course, the horse and buggy, we had the spring wagon and the buckboard, and of course the farmers had their wagons. That's how we traveled, of course, on horseback too. In the earlier years, the ladies still used the side saddles. They never straddled a horse. They used the side saddle.
But you were saying something before we started about something the horses did to make side saddles hard to ride.
Well, the horses, they, of course, resented being saddled, and they would just expand themselves, you know. And then after we got on the horse, well, they would let out this gas, whatever wind that they were holding, and then often the saddle would be loose, and it would slide off, and we'd slide off with the saddle.
Horses got even with
you. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you think of anything that was unusual about stores?
Well, of course, we didn't have the shelves that we have now in the modern stores, loaded with all these wonderful merchandise. We had staples, like flour and sugar and beans and tea and coffee, and a few canned goods like salmon and sardines, things that the farmers didn't raise. These were the staples that we would find in the stores. And eggs sold for 5 cents a dozen.
Ooh.
And of course, you couldn't buy fryers, those things, or steaks of things you couldn't buy in a store, mostly, and not even potatoes, because these were things that the farmers raised. Kerosene was and molasses.
How did they carry the kerosene home?
They had cans, each in a gallon can, the little spigot.
And if you forgot the cap to the spigot, what did they do?
I put a potato on it.
kind of boxes were the groceries stored in?
These were bins that were built in with a glass front. And you could see crackers and cheese were a big thing. And, of course, it was a meeting place for many farmers. They would come, you know, in the winter and sit around this belly, a pot-belly stove, you know. And and tell tales, you know, smoke and chew tobacco. And some of these stores carried both material, you know, but this was mostly calicoes, things that the farmers' wives needed, you know. But the grocers that I mentioned, they were kept in bins, and you could see through the glass.
And point to which one you wanted.
Yes. Uh-huh. Raisins and prunes, those dried fruits, but very seldom fresh fruits.
Going to the grocery store, did you pay for everything in cash, or did they let you charge things?
Through the summer, often the merchant had to carry the people. The teacher, for instance, was not paid through the summer, and the farmers weren't getting in any money through the summer. So he nearly always had to give credit until the fall. Until the crops came in.
And then you paid them for the whole summer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were there any sort of reward when you paid the bill?
Always. Uh-huh. The merchant would give a sack of candy, the mixed candies.
And that kind of made paying the bill not so bad.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Can you remember the first time you talked on a telephone?
Well, this was years later. In about 1911, we don't mention cities, do we?
You can.
It was in Brenham, Texas, and a Dr. Tristram's home was installed with a telephone, but very few other neighbors had telephones. He also had a drugstore, and it was necessary for him to have a telephone, but very few. In the country, there were no telephones at that time.
Do you remember why you made your first telephone call?
Well, I had to answer the telephone.
You were working for
him? I was working there, and I had to answer the telephone.
Then, when you got older and you moved to San Antonio to go into nurse's training, what was nurse's training like?
Well, it was, all the young girls, of course, were enthused about nursing because it was during the World War I, and the boys were going into the service and the girls were going to become nurses. So we were all anxious and enthused to become nurses. And I was inspired too. So I enlisted, or rather, I came to San Antonio. Robert B. Green?
Uh-huh.
The Robert B. Green. County hospital at that time was one of the newer hospitals. It was fully equipped with the latest equipment at the time, and we had a lovely uniform. We had a pink and white checked uniform with a fichu that came around the neck sort of like a collar and crossed and went under the band of the apron. And the apron was large and full, almost to the ground, and covered the whole uniform. It was made of sheeting and starched, of course. very pretty uniform. And, of course, the 3 first months you were on probation. And then after that, you got your uniform, and you were assigned your duty on certain floors. I remember my very first assignment was the 4th floor, where the colored people were. And it was night duty. I had night duty. And I had to, I learned how to give shots. But at that time, we had no sulfur drugs of any kind. These terrible diseases, like gonorrhea and syphilis, they were simply isolated, and we could do nothing for them. They died a terrible death. And pneumonia, we treated, the doctors prescribed mustard jackets. And these, they were made of a paste of flour and mustard, dry mustard. You made a paste and smeared it on a cloth that fitted both front and back of the lungs. And you applied Vaseline to the skin to keep it from blistering. And you had to watch it closely. They usually prescribed it to be put on 2 hours on and 2 hours off. And, some were cured, others died. We had no sulfa drugs to give like we have now. And tuberculosis, of course, we had no drugs either there. Usually a rest was prescribed, and fresh air, lots of milk, you know, but there was no cure for it.
Since you still are connected with hospitals, what do you notice is one of the main differences besides the drugs?
Now, of course, we have all these modern methods of treating patients. We have inhalation therapy and the EKG, you know, the electrocardiograms, and x-rays. The doctors in those days, they merely guessed at the diagnosis. Very few x-rays were taken, and they just guessed. And many a time, a person's appendix bursted before they knew what was ailing him, you know. Now, of course, as soon as the patient comes into the hospital, he his x-rays are taken. The doctor doesn't touch him unless he has an x-ray. And, of course, we used, in those days, I remember the hospitals, people would say I hate that smell in the hospital. And it was Lysol and carbolic acid that was used. And naturally, Lysol, they're both very strong. And you did smell. You recognized the smell of the hospital by Lysol and carbolic acid. But that's what we had in those days. And, of course, boric acid solutions were used. The infant's eyes were washed out with the boric acid solutions. And we had Lysol solutions. And but we gave no intravenous feedings in those days. No. And this is all. And I don't think we even had any blood transfusions then. We didn't give blood transfusions. This is all, you know, this is all modern.
I think it would be kind of interesting to tell about meeting your husband when you were at the hospital.
Well, we, of course, the nurses, when they had their leisure hours, we had a recreation room where we had a piano and we sang, and sometimes the policemen and firemen would come and meet there with us in the recreation room. And of course, he was introduced to me as Hermann Kupfernagel, and that was so strange because my name was Kupfernagel, and such an unusual name that we became interested in each other and our background. And first thing you know, I noticed he drove such a cute little red car, and this attracted me, of course, because cars in those days still, you know, fascinating and something new. So he took me for long rides, and I followed it up then, and we became engaged and married.
So you were Paula Kupfernagel before you were married?
Right.
Paula Kupfernagel
Mrs. Hermann Kupfernagel after we married, uh-huh.
You said that you went to the hospital because the boys were going to war and the girls were going into nursing. What were some of the other reactions to the war?
What impressed me is how they brought these boys out of the backwoods that had never seen, never been in the city. They brought these boys from the backwoods, you know, and they knew nothing but the hole, you know. They're familiar with the hole, but not with a gun. And these, it was rough, really rough on these boys. And how they were sent to France then, you know, and it was so hard on these families when the boys didn't come back home. And my family, my brother, was of a German background. His own cousins. He had to fight his own cousins over there. You see, he fought for America, but against Germany, his own cousins.
Did you feel any discrimination against Germans here in this country?
I knew that there was naturally a prejudice against the Germans because we were at war with Germany, and these Germans in America, they still had some very warm feelings towards Germany because their forebears, sometimes their own parents, came from Germany. But I wanted my children to grow up to be Americans. And they were born about the time, shortly after World War I, and I didn't even teach them German, although I spoke it fluently and could read it and write it. I wanted them to be Americans, and I did not teach them German.
And so none of your children
speak it? None of my children. They had a German name, and a friend of mine, she said to me, "Ein deutsches Kind und kann nicht Deutsch sprechen, das schäm dich doch." That means a German child and can't speak German, you should be ashamed of yourself.
But that was the way it was.
This is a fact. Uh-huh. This was a fact.
Going back further than World War One, do you remember any time where people were punished publicly?
I remember something that shocked me when I was a very young child, but my sister had been sent to the closest little town. And when she came back, she was horrified. She said she had seen a Negro woman in being punished with chains because she had stolen something in the public square. She was being punished, beaten with these chains.
Do you think this was a rare occurrence?
I can't imagine, because this was so long after the Civil War that they still use these terrible methods of punishing colored people.
Get to a more pleasant subject. Could you tell us something about the everyday life?
Well, the women worked alongside of the men in the fields. They protected their hands in mittens and their faces with bonnets. These bonnets were made of a cotton material, and slats were inserted in the hood to protect them from the sun. And they worked all week in the fields. But on Saturday evening, they dressed up in their finery and went always to a dance nearly every Saturday night. And of course, they would do the hair up. And shall I tell them about the rats?
Yeah, tell us about the rats.
In those days, in order to do your hair up, they didn't tease it, but they used rats, which were made of combings formed into a roll, and these were placed under the hair, and the hair was combed up over these rats and fastened down with side combs and a back comb and a fancy little ribbons. And of course, each girl would wear a fan around her neck on a ribbon. And of course, there was no air conditioning, and of course, they would get hot dancing, and that fan would come out, you know, and each one would be fanning. You know, sometimes the flirty girl would hide behind the fan. And let's see, the style in those days, if I remember right, we wore high-button shoes and very large hats with the ostrich plumes. They were very beautiful. And the skirts were of a voile, a black voile trimmed with ribbon, and they were pleated, and floor length. And they would sort of swish and make, like taffeta, make a kind of a rattling noise, mm-hmm. You know. And shirtwaist trimmed lace with a high collar and long sleeves.
How did you hold on the big hats?
They used enormous long hat pins. They were quite ornamental. Fancy little knobs, pearl-studded things. I remember my mother, we were in a hurry to get to church, and as she came out, we were all in the buggy, sometimes five or six of us children would be in the buggy, two on the back axle, and one or two hanging the legs down on the floorboard, you know, and then mother and father sat in the seat with one or two little ones on their laps. And I happened to look up and I saw a little trickle of blood running down my mother's forehead, and she in the excitement had stuck her head with one of these hat pins.
They were dangerous.
Oh, yeah. They were. Yeah. They were sometimes used as weapons. The women used them.
There was one way to keep someone in their place.
Then
You're talking about being in the wagon or in the buggy going to church. What about the churches?
Well, to get there, we often had to go through creek bottoms with deep chuck holes. And we were scared to death because sometimes those chuck holes would be to the axle, you know. And, it was quite hard to make these trips to the church. But I remember one Christmas night, we had to get there. We had a program. My father had a program lined up. And it was strictly a religious program. We dramatized the Christmas story and represented the Christ child and the mother, Mary and Joseph, and sang the religious hymns. Santa Claus never appeared. It was the Christ child that brought the Christmas gifts. And we were presented with bags of candy and nuts and fruit. Each child received a bag of candy and fruit.
On regular Sundays, what was the arrangement in church?
The women would sit on one side and the men on the other. Even husband and wife would separate. The woman would go to the right and the men to the left.
Where did the children go?
They sat in the front.
Did they have to sit separately?
Yes, they were all separated. There's something interesting I forgot to tell you about the school. Did I describe the school? The seats. But in the back of the schoolhouse, there would be a shelf where the children had their little tin buckets in which they brought their lunch. And there was usually a large sandwich of homemade bread smeared with the rendered fat, you know, and of naturally a big piece of sausage or maybe a boiled egg, something like that. And sometimes these boys would keep a little lunch under their desk, you know. Sometimes it was a piece of sausage, and during the school period they would just bring out a piece of the sausage. Nothing unusual.
Where did you eat your lunches?
Usually in the school ground. If it rained, of course, we ate our lunch in the school. And once a week, the schoolhouse was swept. Two girls were assigned to do the sweeping. And you can imagine these many feet that brought in mud from outside, and it would become dust, you know, at the end of the week, you know, you can just smell the dust to heaven. Oh, it was awful. And the drinking bucket of water was on the outside. There was a little porch by the steps, and the roof over covered this porch part. And there was a bucket with a dipper. And all the children, you know, we all drank out of that one dipper. Just one. No separate drinking cups. They all drank out of this one dipper.
One time you said something about the difficulty of getting water.
There was in different places where we live. In fact, I remember so many places where water was scarce. Maybe one neighbor would have a well that had good drinking water. And we would go there and carry our drinking water. And then we would have to go down to the river or to the nearest creek and bring our wash water up. And this was often just a little hole somewhere where the cattle were gathered, and it was also our swimming hole. And, of course, we were never afraid of snakes. They were rattlesnakes and water moccasins and everything, but we were never afraid of snakes, copperheads.
How did cisterns, were they used?
Yes. In one place, the water we drank came off of the school roof and was led by gutters into an underground cistern. It was filled with bricks with a lid on it. But this was our drinking water, this rainwater. It was stored there from the rains.
Did any homes have cisterns?
Yes. Of course, they had wells and windmills, but so often the water was not fit for humans. It was all right for cattle, but humans couldn't drink water. And then, of course, in one place, it was near Houston, in the rice fields. At that time, they were just introducing rice into Texas because corn and cotton was the crop. They were the crops. But they were beginning to introduce rice into Texas. And this, of course, had to be irrigated. And they brought, they dug canals and brought water from rivers to irrigate these rice fields. And mosquitoes, you couldn't sleep unless you had a mosquito bar. Each bed had a mosquito bar over it. And two or three members of a family would always have malaria. And there was one patent medicine that I remember that we had to take. It was Oxidine. And we took this regularly because it prevented malaria, at least. I think it contained quinine or something. But this was a patent medicine that everybody took Oxidine. Anyway, we were punished when we didn't take it.
Can you remember about the year that rice started being a crop?
This must have been early in 1902 or 1903. I think it was an Englishman by the name of Troberg that introduced it. And now, of course, it's a flourishing crop in that territory, one of the main crops.
When you were a child, can you remember any of the things like, was Teddy Roosevelt in that era, or was he a little previous?
This was later. I wasn't living in San Antonio at the time, but my husband often spoke of President Roosevelt and his Rough Riders here in San Antonio.
Well, you were saying that your husband was a fireman. Can you tell me something about his experiences in the fire department?
Well, he drove the three horses that you often see in pictures, pulling this steamer, this large round steamer. It was used to put out fires, just how, I don't know, but he drove these three horses, and they were named Peacock, Phil, and Jerry. He often spoke of these three horses, and he loved them, never used a whip on them. And as soon as they got back from a run, he curried them and exercised them and rubbed them down. He loved those horses. And then later, when the motorized equipment came in, he drove the chief. He was the first, and he drove he was a chauffeur for the chief, fire chief. And he was in the fire department 7 years. But his mother was always so worried when he went to fires that she persuaded him to give up his job at the fire department. And then he went to work for the telephone company, and he put in over 40 years with the telephone company.
Can you think of anything unusual about the homes?
Of course, my father, being a minister, he insisted on teaching us religion. And at the breakfast table, we sometimes sat for hours listening to instructions. And my mother be on pins and needles because her bread dough was running over, you know, and the animals had to be fed, but we had to sit at that table while he gave instructions. And not one of us dared to even make a move, like we were impatient, you know, to get up. We had our, in between our scripture reading, he would preach to us. And the school children were already arriving, you know. That was later, when he became a school teacher. And we would be singing a hymn, you know, and we were embarrassed, you know, because we knew the school children, you know, their ears open, you know, what's going on, you know, over there. But we didn't dare oppose our father in anything. His word was law. And he was very severe. Even he was harder on his own children because we should always be examples to the other children because we were the school teachers and the pastor's children. We should always set an example to the other children. And of course, we didn't always come up to his expectations. And we were severely punished at home, not at school, but he punished us at home. But he was hard. He was a hard teacher and a severe preacher. And the average communicant didn't like to hear this. He preached Helen Heifer? Hellfire. Oh boy, he preached it. And the average person didn't want to listen to that. And first thing you know, he had a move. He just and we moved frequently.
When you moved to different parsonages, were they all pretty much alike, or were there some that were different?
They certainly weren't very nice. No. Sometimes they were hastily constructed. Slats weren't even nailed down, and the wind would whistle through these boards, you know, and they were uncomfortable, most uncomfortable.
How did you keep warm in the winter?
We had feather beds. My mother brought 4 or 5 feather beds beds from Germany when she came over. She came over as a bride.
And the feather beds were pretty good.
Yes. And we slept three to a bed. The one in the center was always a little warmer than the one outside. But we had our frostbitten feet. We suffered. It was most uncomfortable. Even though we lived in Texas, it got awfully cold.
What about window screening?
They were unknown. They were known. We had shutters. Sometimes the better homes had shutters. And, of course, lightning rods. Each house was equipped with lightning rods.
The lack of screens, did that cause you any trouble?
We were used to it. The flies, we didn't know that there was anything, wrong with flies. We would see them bring milk buckets in with a ring of black around the edge, flies. And it was nothing unusual to see dishes on the table covered with flies. You couldn't even tell what was in the dish. The flies were so thick. And I remember a birthday cake. We cut it. It was a coconut cake. And as we cut it, we saw these little dark things in the cake. We thought they were raisins, but on discovery, we found that there were flies that were baked into this cake.
What did you do with them?
We just pulled them out.
And then ate the cake.
Oh, dear.
Flies changes, doesn't it? You see a fly in a cake now, we'd probably throw the whole cake away. Can you think of anything that we might add to the things we've said? What about funerals?
Shall I tell this? I remember a little sister that died. She was about 2 years old, and she had, if I remember, convulsions, but we had no autopsy made, and she died. And my father built a little coffin out of pine boards and lined it with the black cloth, and we took her to the cemetery, and he buried her. He used the Lutheran ritual, a burial ceremony. He was familiar with it because he was a minister. And we never knew what caused the death of this little sister.
How many children were in your family?
My mother gave birth to 12 children. 7 survived. Beside this little sister I mentioned, 4 others died in infancy.
Was this an uncommon thing?
No. Women often gave birth to 10 and 12 children, and it was nothing unusual to have 2 or 3 or 4 wiped out with either diphtheria or typhoid fever or something like that. We had nothing to, we knew of no medicine to spinal meningitis. I know one farmer family lost 3 sons with spinal meningitis. The doctors, they didn't know how to treat it either. And my mother never had a doctor with these 12 children. A midwife helped her with these 12 children.
Are there any expressions that you can remember that were used over and over, some of the German expressions?
Exclamations, yes. There was some that didn't sound very good. Shall I mention them?
Uh-huh.
Du verfluchter Hund.
How could you translate?
Well, in the cursed dog, like the Germans would say, Schweinhund, just they have a coarse words. not really cuss words, but they were coarse language. And my father would explode every now and then with some words that didn't sound so nice.
Well, some expressions that ladies could use.
Well, my mother, when she was excited about something, she would say, "Ach, ye," or "Gott in Himmel," or something like that on it. If you just discussed it with someone, you know, that just went on and on and on, you know, and didn't amount to anything, you know, you would say, "Viel geschreien, keine Wolle," you know, and that he just put out a lot of blabber, you know, and it didn't amount to anything. You would simply say, "Quatsch mit Soße."
Too much sauce.
Too much. And just similar expressions like that. I can't recall them all.
Can you think of any of the games that you played?
We were never allowed to have cards, like poker cards, anything like that. We were allowed to play flinch, domino, or checkers. We had no paper dolls or anything. And we had books, but my father supervised our reading.
Were the books allowed? No novels. English or German?
German.
Did most of the children speak and read German?
Yes, until later. But in my youth, even the communities where we lived were always German communities, because my mother never learned to speak English.
Then were the Sunday services at church conducted
always in German?
And the Christmas hymns were?
Always. German hymns, German service. And I was confirmed at the catechism. I learned the catechism in German.
Thank you very much. Annette takes it.